pretty nervous.
Dancing with the President in Dillingham. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, September 2nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the White House announces funding to help Kivalina and other villages with relocation effort.
It's going to help us a little bit, but we need more than that. To move a native village of Kivalina, it's going to cost a lot of more money than that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
President Obama began his tour of Western Alaska with a stop in Bristol Bay, landing in Dillingham just before noon. While Obama had sparkling clear weather for his tour around Seward yesterday, it was drizzling and a little chilly for the duration of the Dillingham stop. No mind, says residents. That's what fishing weather is usually like in the region, and fishing was the main thing locals wanted the president to know more about while he was in salmon country. KDLG's Hannah Colton has more.
Dillingham's Samuka Smith was among a delighted crowd of about 150 who waited at the airport to greet the president for his noon arrival.
I mean, this is the most excitement we've had, and maybe we'll get some of our issues taken care of with the pebble mine and drilling. I hope he sees the beauty of our town, of the area, actually.
The motorcade then took Obama to a closed event on Dillingham's Kanakanak Beach, a popular subsistence fishing spot on the Nooshigak Bay. There, the president got a lesson on picking fish from a set net. He was going to learn how to cut fish as well, but it seems the Secret Service nixed any sharp knives on the beach. The president was given a jar of smoked salmon and seemed impressed as he sampled some traditional salmon strips.
That's a good recipe right there. Yeah. You guys used to have salmon cakes?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yes, sir.
Break up some Ritz crackers in them, mix it up, fry them up. That was right here in Bristol Bay.
Mr. Obama didn't take any questions from the press, but in brief remarks, he stressed the need to protect subsistence and commercial fishing in the bay against oil and gas exploration and other environmental threats. A larger crowd was gathered out of the rain in the middle school gym, where the president watched several traditional dances prepared by the 4-H Native Dance Group. He surprised them by hopping up to join them for an encore.
I've been practicing.
Dancer Haley Carty says she's a little overwhelmed by her moment in the spotlight dancing for the president.
It was kind of weird and pretty nervous.
After the school, the motorcade stopped at a local grocery where Mr. Obama grabbed lunch from the deli and commented on the high food prices in Bush, Alaska. Then Dillingham's wet but enthusiastic crowd downtown got their last glimpse of the Commander-in-Chief before it was back to the airport to board Air Force One. Young Dante Luckhurst was among those just happy to enjoy the spectacle of the day.
We got to see a lot of cops, and we seen a lot of black cars and army men, and we seen a good plane flying by that the president was in.
The light drizzle hardly let up for the president's brief stop in Bristol Bay. Inside of 3 hours, Obama was back on Air Force One, bound for Kotzebue. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
Air Force One landed in Kotzebue just before 5 p.m. President Obama is now the first sitting president to visit the U.S. Arctic. The president's schedule is tight. The White House agenda notes he will speak at the Kotzebue High School around 6 p.m. and then tour the Shore Avenue project that has protected the westward shoreline from storm erosion. It isn't clear how much or if he'll have time to speak with local people. He's scheduled to fly out between 8 and 9 p.m. KNOM's Matthew Smith has been reporting from Kotzebue for the last few days. I spoke to him earlier this afternoon and asked him about the atmosphere in the community.
The atmosphere is very much
excited and in tune with that historic moment. People are very aware that the president is bringing the national spotlight with him. He's bringing the eyes of the Alaska media, the national media, and many across the world to America's place in the Arctic and some of the very real issues related to climate change. At a roundtable this morning with a lot of tribal elders and leaders from around the region who are here to greet the president and hope to get some time with him, we heard people talking firsthand experiences about what they've seen in their communities, whether it's thawing permafrost, increased erosion, worse weather, harsher storms, food security issues like subsistence resources that have been reliable for generations becoming harder and harder to access. So there's a lot of excitement that the president is bringing everything that a presidential visit entails to the community of Kotzebue, to the people of the Northwest Arctic. There's a lot of excitement here.
I know that last night there was a kind of a festive atmosphere with a big community potluck, and I was told that there was a soup-making contest and dessert-making contest. Can you tell me about kids? Have you talked to students and children in Kotzebue about their thoughts on the president coming to Kotzebue?
I have. A lot of them have said that they've been discussing the president and climate change and what the president's role is in addressing national issues like this and other issues in their classrooms. I spoke to a 12-year-old who went to the Niketchot Inupiaq Language Immersion School class, and he said he remembers the president, first coming to office when he was a young boy in that school. He's now in the middle school here in Kotzebue, and he says it's a familiar topic, but to see it come to Kotzebue, to see the president, to see the executive branch coming, he says that's exciting. A lot of teachers have said it's made their way into their curriculum this week, and a lot of the teachers told me that they're ending their classrooms by making sure the students all have one question about one question that they would like to ask the president. And a lot of the students said, "What are you going to do about climate change?" And another asked me, "What are your big decisions about war?" So some fairly deep but open-ended questions there from some of the students in Kotzebue.
That was KNOM's Matthew Smith reporting from Kotzebue. As President Obama tours Northwest Alaska, 5 Chinese Navy ships have been spotted in the Bering Sea off Southwest Alaska. Pentagon officials say 3 of China's surface warfare ships, a resupply vessel, and a landing craft were seen in international waters off the Aleutian Islands. Commander Bill Urban is a spokesman for the Secretary of Defense.
This is the first time we've observed People's Liberation Army Navy ships in the Bering Sea. We do respect the freedom of all nations to operate military vessels in international waters in accordance with international law. So no reason why they shouldn't be there.
Urban declined to say how long the Navy has been tracking the ships or just where they were located in the Bering Sea. International waters start 12 nautical miles offshore. An unnamed U.S. official told the Associated Press the Chinese ships moved into the Bering Sea near Alaska after joining in a naval exercise with Russia. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, fatigue sets in for Alaskans trying to spot the president.
We're exhausted.
Tell him that. We're exhausted of trying to catch him.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
The president of Shell Oil Company says exploratory drilling off Alaska's northwest coast is going well despite stormy weather last week that caused the company to halt operations for a few days. Marvin Odom told the Associated Press safety will be the overriding determinant of whether Shell completes exploratory wells this year in the Chukchi Sea. Federal regulators have given Shell permission to drill up to 6 exploratory wells in the Chukchi over 2 years. Shell in 2008 spent $2.1 billion on Chukchi leases and is attempting to confirm a massive oil field that could provide a 50-year supply of petroleum. President Obama wants to beef up America's fleet of icebreaking ships. John Ryan from member station KUCB in Unalaska has more.
President Obama proposes to speed up construction of a heavy icebreaker by 2 years. He wants the new ship to be polar ready by the year 2020. Obama also said he plans on working with Congress to plan for an expanded fleet of icebreakers. The U.S. Coast Guard has 2 icebreakers in working condition. Russia has about 40. Canada, Finland, and Sweden each have 6 or more. The congressional delegations of Alaska and Washington State have long called for more icebreakers. Senator Lisa Murkowski's office says Obama's announcement is less a plan than an acknowledgement that the needs must be addressed. One of the Coast Guard's 2 working icebreakers is currently at 87.5 degrees north latitude. It's a few days away from the North Pole on a science mission. Chief Scientist David Cadco with Florida International University says the ice has been thinner than anticipated. That's allowed the Healy to burn less fuel breaking through the ice, and it's made the work of the 51 scientists on board smoother. German and Canadian icebreakers are also cruising the Arctic for science this summer.
It's quite historic. 3 icebreakers from 3 different countries working together and collaboratively.
The 3 ships are working to get a baseline of conditions throughout the Arctic Ocean. They want that snapshot of the Arctic before the expected increase in shipping and resource extraction brings more pollution to the top of the world. Climate change is the main theme of the president's highly publicized 3-day tour of Alaska. The president has not taken any questions from the press, and he is not expected to do so while he's here. The White House press office said on Tuesday that Obama will increase ongoing efforts to chart navigation routes through the Aleutians and Bering Sea and more closely monitor sea level and sea ice in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas. In Unalaska, I'm John Ryan.
The White House announced today it will be adding funding and capacity for a wide array of programs in Alaska connected with global warming. The federal government is tapping the Denali Commission as the lead agency to address the relocation of coastal communities across Alaska. But the particulars of that announcement are still being sorted out. At a tribal roundtable in Kotzebue, Percy Ballett of Buckland noted that the $2 million set aside for voluntary relocation is welcomed, but falls far short of the costs.
We appreciate that. We really do. It's going to help us a little bit, but we need more than that. To move a native village of Kivalina, it's going to cost a lot of more money than that.
That $2 million, though, isn't for physical relocation, but instead for launching a coordinated review of which of the 30 or so communities identified in a 2009 report will either move or fortify existing town sites. Up until now, the state has overseen community relocation projects, but with no one agency fully in charge of the intricate logistical challenges. Sally Cox is a planner with the state and has been intimately involved in developing relocation strategies since she began working with New Talk almost a decade ago.
Funding has certainly been a limiting factor because, as I said, we've had to, accomplish projects as funding became available.
So far, 6 communities identified as imperiled have received grant funds to develop plans for relocating or protecting in place. But the grant process is complicated, and technical guidance from regional nonprofits and state agencies has been essential for tribes deciding how to proceed. Cox says she expects the Denali Commission will adapt existing state strategies.
It could potentially make the process go much more smoothly and streamline funding, rules and regulations, and so forth. So I think that there's a lot of potential to make a more efficient process if you've got a coordinating agency.
Officials from the Denali Commission said they wanted to wait until after the president's remarks in Kotzebue tonight to issue a statement on their new role. Though there is no funding sources for actual relocation or mitigation efforts yet, the White House has announced that the president's recently formed Arctic Executive Steering Committee will provide guidance and support to the Denali Commission in the future. Anchorage residents had their last chance to see President Obama this morning as his motorcade left the Captain Cook Hotel and headed toward Jaybird. His presence in downtown caused mixed reactions. KSKA's Ann Hillman waved him a final goodbye.
Helen Ash stood on the corner across from the president's hotel with her friend Carol Campbell, police patrolling in front of her, crowds growing behind her.
We're exhausted.
Tell him that. We're exhausted of trying to catch him.
It's day number 3 of Obama Watch.
You know the process. You've been on this corner for 3 days and you still haven't seen him. So why did you pick this corner again?
You see him very, very quickly. I mean, it's almost, it's a glimpse, it's through black glass, it's, they're going fast.
So you have seen like a sliver?
I've seen a sliver. Not enough to get a picture and not enough to really see his face.
Or feel satiated. It
yes. satiated. I think that's a bit extreme.
Oh.
For Campbell, seeing the president and getting a picture to share with family is a very personal goal.
My grandmother, my aunt, and I pray for him every day at 7:30. My grandma's 94. We do a 3-way call and pray for him every day.
Really?
Yeah.
Ever since the beginning of his presidency?
Oh, absolutely.
How did that start?
We just felt a desire for his well-being and his success. And he's been very successful. Praise God.
But for others downtown, it's a bit of a nuisance.
No, we're not going to be able to get across.
Wait, what if you go around that way?
Well, you've done your best.
You're my witness.
You've done your best. Nothing you can do about it.
Tourists wave maps at police trying to get to their departing buses, but they had few options as sidewalks closed for nearly an hour in anticipation of the president's theoretically imminent departure. Around the corner in K Street convenience store, Ben Jones is selling coffee and snacks like any other day of the week.
We haven't got the chance to feed Obama, but we got to feed the Secret Service guys. Other than that, it really hasn't caused a whole lot of disruption. The court system's been shut down, and those are a lot of our regular customers. But other than that, we've been fairly steady with where we generally are in our numbers.
Back on the sidewalk, a guy with a super-powered lens zooms in on rooftop snipers, roaming Secret Service agents, and curious maids peering out of windows. Raina Swanson glances at his camera screen, then back to the white tent that shrouds the president's car. She's been waiting for 6 years to see Obama. She had tickets for his first inauguration, but it didn't go as planned.
We waited for hours in the cold with a baby in our arms, and we got jammed up in the right before the tunnel, the infamous tunnel. We didn't get in, so we're trying to assuage our long 6 years of trauma.
Carol Campbell fiddles with her phone, hoping the battery will last. Then suddenly, one of the black cars turns on its lights.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Okay. Obama drives by and waves at the screaming crowd, and Campbell scores her winning shot.
My camera backed up to it. I fell out of my head.
And then she's gone, less than a minute after the president, back to regular life. Swanson lingered a bit longer in the moment.
I just want to redo it one more time. Can he just come back? One more time. One more look. Oh, that was great.
From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The Matanuska-Susitna Borough's ailing ferry MV Susitna is poised for sale to the Philippine Red Cross. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports.
The Matanuska-Susitna Assembly untied the giant albatross from its collective neck Tuesday night with a vote to accept about $1.5 million for the motor vessel Susitna. The unused ferry has cost the Matsu Borough about $2 million in storage fees since its construction was completed in 2012. The ferry also needs $1 million in engine repairs, since rainwater leaked into its stacks and ruined 3 out of the vessel's 4 engines earlier this year. At Tuesday's Borough Assembly meeting, Assembly members approved a deal which had been received by the borough on Monday. John Moosey is Matsu Borough Manager.
at the end of the deal, the Philippine Red Cross will get it for rescue purposes, humanitarian purposes, and the borough will net approximately $1.5 million.
The International Red Cross will front the borough $60,000 to cover costs during repairs and will put down an additional $750,000, or half the purchase price, now. Contingent on successful repairs and on an export permit, the Red Cross will fund the remaining $750,000 in the purchase price. Musi says it has not been easy getting a ferry deal.
We have probably for the last 6 months, we have entertained probably seven serious buyers. The offer that they've agreed to, and we try to get agreed to, is they would pay $250,000 up front. We would use that for our insurance deductible to get the engines repaired. If we can deliver the boat and the engines are repaired, if anybody walks away, in this case Philippine Red Cross would walk away, they forfeit that money. So we know they're in for this.
But there are potential roadblocks to the sale. The borough still owes the Federal Transit Administration more than $12 million to repay grants that the borough accepted that were linked to the ferry's successful operation. But ferry operations never took place because of a dispute with Anchorage on where to build a ferry landing on the Anchorage side of Kinnick Arm. The matter of the FTA debt is in negotiation at this time, Musi says. Musi says the borough needs to find a company that can make the ferry engine repairs. He also told the assembly that the borough has an insurance policy on the ferry with Lloyd's of London. And that policy expires August 31st, and that company may decide to drop the borough as a client if repairs don't start soon.
We have been sitting on the repair since January, and Lloyd's of London said, hey, Matsu Borough, what are you going to do? Are you going to fix it? If you're not going to fix it, we're not going to allow you to have insurance after this term expires, because we're not going to insure a boat that doesn't work.
The $1.75 million price tag is less than half the price the borough initially asked for the Susitna. But in the past couple of years, various offers by potential buyers of the ship have not panned out. This is the closest we have come to a sale, Musi told the assembly Tuesday. Musi says that the borough may seek the help of Alaska's congressional delegation if the federal government blocks the sale of the vessel to a foreign entity. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
After a class action grievance, a regime change, a year of renovations, and buying hundreds of $8,000 workstations, state employees are finally moving into their new offices in Douglas. Although the dust has settled, concerns over the new layout have not gone quiet. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Brian Fernette is the regional supervisor for Sportfish. He recently moved back into the renovated building and likes how the new space is flooded with light. Gone are tall cubicle partitions and dark hallways.
It certainly is a lot brighter, there's no question.
But there are some design choices Fernette says employees find puzzling, like how the ceiling bows towards the middle.
Lower in the center, higher on the walls, and I don't know what that is for other than to maybe give the impression that more light's being drawn to the center of the building.
That's intentional?
That's intentional. People think it's a mistake, but it's intentional. Some people look at it for a while, and then they say that's making me kind of nauseous, but after a while, you just get used to it.
Some changes employees may not get used to. As a supervisor, Fernette gets his own office, but most won't. The building has been redesigned for universal space standards, a cost and space-saving plan implemented by then-Governor Sean Parnell. Some workstations were whittled down to about half the square footage, each costing the state over $8,000.
Well, there were a number of concerns that our members had. Of course, it's reduced space for them to work. It was less privacy.
Jim Duncan is the executive director of the Alaska State Employees Association. The union filed for arbitration over the state office layout about 2 years ago, citing safety and health concerns for its members, but eventually reached an understanding with the Walker administration.
The arbitration is still in place. We are just not moving it forward. We had an agreement. An understanding from the administration that they would complete the projects that were underway under the previous administration.
The changes have already happened in Anchorage's Atwood building and a floor of Juneau's state office building. Douglas now has 32 vacant spaces. Andy Mills, a spokesperson, says the Walker-Mallott administration is evaluating if new standards are worth it. And he realizes if it continues, it could affect him.
So the space standards would actually entail me not having an office.
How do you feel about that?
I certainly think that when you're looking at difficult budget times, I think most folks understand you want to look at everything possible when it's sort of a decision between programs, people, or space. But at the same time, you need to be fair and respectful to the employees.
He says some of the sacrifices he wouldn't mind. His floor of the state office building has outdated furniture and a tiny break room with no seating.
If you came and saw it, it's a fairly small room. So it's the size of a closet.
The renovated offices, on the other hand, come with roomier break rooms and updated kitchen appliances. It's designed to increase collaboration. But Mills says the name, Universal Space Standards, does sound a bit drab.
It sounds like it's a gray box that you might be uninviting. But the customizability of the system's furniture, when folks get a chance to look at it, is probably a little more versatile than they would have first thought.
Brian Frenette shows me his new desk. He's able to raise it at work in a standing position or lower it back down.
It's just a simple little switch.
He says the new layout has a bit of a learning curve. The front counter is intermingled with wildlife conservation and sport fish to provide easier access for the public. The Department of Corrections moves in this week. He says for some employees, there have been concerns.
I think what most people will probably tell you what they feel they're having to give up is separation from their coworkers in order to get work done and not be disturbed. Whether or not that comes to light as being a big issue or a small issue, we'll see as time goes.
Frenette says they're looking at white noise machines as a possible solution. The state has no immediate plans to roll out more Universal Space Standards offices. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find our podcast on iTunes, and on Facebook, you can find us at Alaska Public Media. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Hannah Colton in Dillingham, Matthew Smith in Kotzebue, John Ryan in Unalaska, Zachariah Hughes, Ann Hillman and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Monica Goki, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Many Alaskans who die in boating accidents don't die of hypothermia. Without a life jacket, drowning kills long before hypothermia does. More at pledgetolive.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Office of Boating Safety. Alaska oil and gas have a huge impact on all of us, but how much do you really know about them? At akoilandgas.com, you can take an oil and gas IQ quiz and get the facts from reliable sources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek. It makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.